all too frequently. Even in 13-20, his ERA was 3.06, well below the league average of 3.61. And in 258 2/3 innings, he walked just 45 batters, 1.57 batters per nine innings. Better part of his career was after he turned 30, which is somewhat typical of left-handed pitchers. In 1947, the Phillies traded him to Cincinnati, which was probably a turning point in his career. He finished 6-5 for the Reds that year, but the next year he won 11 with four shutouts. In 1949, he won 18, pitching 284 innings, which is considerably higher than the 180 innings we heard Mr. Fusco talk about last night for youthful pitchers, and far more than we see very many pitchers, even with the DH, throw these days. Walked just 80 batters in 284 innings, pitched 5 shutouts, and 20 complete games, which of course would be unheard of today for a club that won only 62. 1951, he only walked 1.38 batters per 9 innings, and won 16 while saving 6. Those aren't stats you hear too often these days either, 16 wins and 6 saves. The league leader in saves that year had only 13. In 1952, which was his peak year, and I think the year for which I got the baseball card to which I referred earlier, he had a 2.81 ERA, 18 complete games, won 17, and pitched 6 shutouts for, again, a team that only won 69 in total. From 1949 through 1952, he averaged 16 wins a year, leading the league in shutouts 2 times. Remained with the Reds through 1954, career record of 119 wins and 154 losses, which, considering the caliber of the teams that he played with, is certainly excellent. If he had been able to pitch for somebody like the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Giants of the early 50s with the hitting that those clubs had, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that he would have very possibly approached 200 wins in his career. His lack of run support is proven by the fact that he ranked 6th on the all-time list with the most 1-0 losses in a career, with 10.
Who compiled that stat?
I did my research, Fritz. I did my research.
Where? His dominance is also proven by the fact that 31 of his 119 wins were shutouts, one shutout for every 4 wins with terrible ball clubs. 4 career one-hitters, including the one that I mentioned earlier. He's considered and proven to be one of the greatest control pitchers of all time, 10th in Major League history with 1.88 walks per 9 innings, and held opposing batters to an on-base percentage, again, not batting average, but on-base percentage of 3.06 during the course of his career. Among the managers he played for were Gabby Hartnett, Bucky Harris, Bertie Tebbets, Rogers Hornsby. Played with people like Ted Kluszewski, Johnny Vandermeer, Harry Walker, Ewell Blackwell. And I think Mr. Ravensburger confirmed with Scott before this that he negotiated contracts with, among others, Branch Rickey, and I won't tell you what he called Branch Rickey. Maybe he will, but I won't. Also, you may not be aware that Mr. Ravensburger was the first Blue Jay pitcher to win a Major League game. You're probably aware that during a couple of the war years, the Phillies were known as the Blue Jays. And he was actually the winner of the Major League All-Star Game in 1944. It's my pleasure, and it's truly my pleasure, to introduce you to one of the first baseball cards that I ever had, a pitcher with a truly superior career, and someone I very much look forward to hearing this morning, Mr. Ken Ravensburger.
It was an honor when Scott called me. He started negotiating with me February?
It was a while back.
And we talked and talked and talked, and I said, yeah, I'll agree to come over here. I like to talk baseball, and I'll tell you how I got started. I was the oldest of 5 boys. Unfortunately, I lost 2 of my brothers. And Dad was determined for me to be a ball player. And me being a left-hander, when we were kids, he bought a catching glove and used to take me down the back alley. And he'd catch me. Well, I didn't throw as hard as... I did throw a little bit harder later on in catch me, and if I didn't throw where he had the glove, he'd throw it back to me pretty hard. He was a lot, he wasn't too old at the time, and he wanted me to be a ball player. Well, the funny part of it is, my mother wanted me to be a piano player. And I took lessons for 2 years. But as far as knowing anything about pianos, I did not know anything about playing the piano anymore. And that was back in the days when they had the American Legion teams. And our team in 33, we had a pretty good team, but we played the Reading team, and they had a real good ball club, too. Well, it ended up that they beat us in the game that we played them, and they went on to win the state championship. Well, in 34, we turned the tables and we beat them, and we ended up winning the state championship. Well, we played the regional finals up in Bethlehem. It was us, New Jersey, Maryland, and I believe Delaware. Well, we won our first game on a Friday night, and Sunday, Maryland had won their game, so us and Maryland ended up playing Sunday. Well, they ended up beating us 2-1 from York, and they went on to win the regional finals for the whole country that year. So that was 35. I went down to a little town of New Freedom, right outside of York there, and pitched on there. And we had another pitcher there by the name of Doc Bars that had been quite a pitcher up at Gettysburg College. And the manager of our team down there was a good friend of Mr. Griffiths down at Washington at the time. And he gave this Doc Bars an opportunity to sign with the Washington Ball Club. But also, Doc Bars' dad was a good friend of Herb Penox, who was general manager of the Boston Red Sox. And he favored the Red Sox. And I got the same offer from Mr. Griffith to come to Washington. Well, that was in the spring of 35 or 36. And it was a promise of so much money, and he offered me $1,000 to sign and $250 a month. Well, in spring training, with the season just about over for spring training, he called me in the office or up in the lobby of the hotel and said I wanted too much money. Well, I told him, I said, well, I never said a word what I wanted. I said, you give me the offer. Well, it ended up that they sent me in another big left-hander down to Winter Garden, I believe, or Winter Park, which was the Albany Club. And we got down there on a Saturday, and Sunday morning we got word that we're supposed to join the other team, which was going to be the Harrisburg team in the New York Penn League. And that same year, that is when the Island team got washed out up there. The field got washed out, and they moved to York. Well, we joined the club up in the, we left down in Florida, we joined the team up in Columbia, South Carolina, and came on through New York here, and we went down to Fort Meade, Maryland, and played a team down there. I pitched and won the game, or was winning pitcher, let's say. That was the beginning of the week when we came back to York, and we played a team of all-stars from Baltimore. Joe Cambra, who was a scout for the Washington Ball Club at the time and was scouting the Cuban ball players, brought a team to York, and we played them out at Eagles Park in York there, and we won that game that I pitched. Well, Monday morning, I come out to practice, and the manager, Dutch Norman, I imagine some of you heard of Dutch around the city and this territory, that well, they were going to send me down to Mayodan, down in the Bi-State League in North Carolina. Well, this is when Dad stepped in, because I wasn't 21 years old then yet. Dad said, no, you fooled around with him long enough now, he's coming home. Well, I was home, but he would Little League we get on there, and I ended up signing over to Columbia then in the Lancaster City County League, which was a real good league. They had a bunch of good ball players in there. Some of them had been in professional baseball. So at the end of 36, 37, I come over here in the what they call the Lebanon Valley League. And this is where Pop Kelschner, the old Cardinals scout, had priority, I guess, in this territory of signing anybody that was foolish enough to sign with the Cardinals. So he ended up signing me and sent me down to Cambridge, Maryland in the Eastern Shore League. Now he told me when I got down there, he said, they're going to only offer you $65 a month. But he said, I'll see that you get $75 a month. Well, to me, I didn't know. That was big money, I guess, at the time. And I went down there and I ended up, about a month after the season opened, and I ended up winning 18 and losing 6 down there that year. And that moved me up to Rochester in the International League in 1938. Well, in 38, I was lucky enough to marry the woman that I have now. In fact, last Saturday was 60 years, so. Thank you. So we had 5 children, and I ended up coming home here, or no, going up to Rochester, and we got married in June the 13th. In fact, last Saturday was the wedding anniversary, and I ended up Rochester. Well, I won 15 and lost 10 up there that year, and was picked for the International League All-Star team of the left-handers. Me and Marius Russo, I don't know if you old fellas remember him as a Yankee pitcher at Newark. And it ended up in, I went to spring training with the Cardinals in 39 then. But like the reading there, I only spent about a couple of weeks with them until I was sent back to Rochester. And I won 15 and lost 15 the rest of that year. And the day after Christmas of 39, that's when the Cubs bought me, that they give up Steve Messner and Gene Lillard for myself. Well, I went over to the Cubs in 40, and I played for Gabby Hart, who was a wonderful guy and I thought a good manager. So it ended up at, I was doing relief pitches, and every now and then he would give me a chance to be a spot starting pitcher. So I ended up winning 7 and losing 9, and so 41, they got rid of him, and a guy by the name of Jimmy Wilson came over. Well, if you remember him, in 39, he was the catcher at Cincinnati in the World Series, and he's the only one that ever stole a base in that series. So it ended up at Wilson. I don't know what happened, but we had 26 players on the roster by cut-down time, and I was the one to be sent up to St. Paul. Well, I ended up going up there and winning 10 and losing 9, and rejoined the Cubs in the fall of the year, so I was eligible to play in the what they call the City Series between the White Sox. And in 42, they left me and Eddie Wakus, you remember him, the first baseman that got shot by the girl. They left him and an outfielder, Barney Olson, and myself with the Los Angeles Ball Club. Well, I ended up winning 17 and losing 18 that year at Los Angeles. In the following year, 43, I ended up winning 19 and losing 11. I had 19 wins with 2 weeks to go, and I couldn't hit that 20 mark. I lost 4 games the last 2 weeks of the season, all by one run. my time in Los Angeles. Well, that fall, the Philly Scott had checked on me out there, and they asked the manager of the Seattle club, who was Bill Skiff, about who is the outstanding left-hander in the league out here. And Bill named me, and the Phillies bought me, and I joined them the last week of the season. Well, that's when this, what was his name, Bill Cox, I believe, owned the ball club at that time, that later on he got caught for gambling on his own teams, and I joined him the last week of the season, and you talk about how cheap he was, he paid me less than what I was making out in the minor leagues. So in 44 then, that's when I started coming around and started winning some ball games, and I think being the winning pitcher in that All-Star game was one of the highlights of my career. I mean, a lot of people write and they send these baseball cards and they want to know questions and what you consider your career, your best things in your career. Well, I tell them that, and also pitching 4 one-hitters. Now, I had two one-hitters against the Cardinals. My one ex-teammate, Marty Marion, ruined one of them, and another first baseman by the name of Nippy Jones. He didn't start too many here. He didn't last too long, but I had the Cardinals beat about 7-0, I believe, that night, and I got behind him, 2 balls and 0 strikes, and I threw one down the middle, and he just about decapitated me with a line drive back to the box. Now, why he was swinging it, no 2-ball, no strike count when they're that far behind, I don't know, but that was the only other hit they got. And then I had a one-hitter against Chicago, against one of my ex-teammates when I was in the service down at Bainbridge, Eddie Mixes, who they had got from the Brooklyn Dodgers. And Eddie could run like a deer. I mean, he was fast. And he ended up that day hitting one of those swinging bunts down the third baseline. And our third baseman fielded it, but he beat the throw to first base. Well, that was the base hit they got off of me. And then the one game, or the one that you talked about with the Brooklyn Dodgers, it was a funny thing. I'll go a little further on that game. That Saturday in Cincinnati, we got beat as usual, and I had a place that I always liked to go and enjoy myself after the ball game and drink a little amber stuff. And, I guess I must have overdid it that day, and I got back to the hotel in the wee hours of the morning. I figured, well, here we are. We lost 18 or 19 straight games. Another loss is another loss. So it ended up at the, I got up Sunday morning. I felt like something the cat covered up. And, I don't remember, if you remember a little left-hand pitcher Brooklyn had by the name of Joe Hatton? Well, him and me, we hooked up that Sunday in the game in Cincinnati, and I beat him 1-0. Bobby Adams, our third baseman, had a home run. And we pitched that ball game in an hour and 32 minutes. Now, I don't know if any of you was watching that Baltimore game last night, but I sat up and watched the finish of it when Palermo hit the home run in the 15th inning. So here you were, almost 6 hours of that ball game. Well, it ended up at the, with the Brooklyn. Well, it seemed like different teams that I got with, you just never had them winning season. I played with some wonderful guys with the Cubs. We had Bill Cavaretta, we had Augie Galang, we had Stanley Hatch, we had Billy Herman, and with Gabby Hartnett there as a manager, We had pitchers like Bill Lee, Larry French, Lon Warnicki was one of our pitchers there. Now, you didn't beat out these kind of guys as starting pitchers. You only filled in when maybe one of them wasn't fielding up to par. And it was the same way after I got over to Cincinnati and the Phillies. Then I was getting my regular turn as a pitcher. But as luck had it, in 47, I was pitching in Philadelphia against the Cincinnati Ball Club. And Augie Galland, who was a real good friend of mine when we played in Chicago, he was hitting, and I don't know, I threw a pitch to him and something snapped in my left arm, but I never threw it a guy. I only ever threw one guy in my life. And I hit him and down here in the back. I never threw it a guy's head. But when I let go of that pitch, it was right at his head. And I yelled for him. I said, "Watch out, Augie," and he went down. There was no hard feelings or anything. And that was the end for a couple weeks of me pitching. I don't know, something snapped in my elbow or my shoulder, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And in the meantime, Ben Chapman, who was our manager in Philadelphia, he wanted another catcher, so Cincinnati had a catcher by the name of Al Lakeman. And they wanted me. Johnny Noon was the manager at the time in 47 when I was traded over there. And Johnny Noon said, "Well, we'll take Raffensperger for Lakeman." Well, it ended up at, I went over to Cincinnati, and I, Warren Giles, who was the general manager and later became the president of the National League, I went in to sign contract and talk over stuff with him, and I told him, I said, "Well, Warren," I said, "I guess you didn't know you made a deal for a sore arm pitcher." He said, "No, we didn't." I said, "Well, I never had a sore arm in my life yet," and I said, "I don't think it's anything serious," and I ended up just doing a little throwing every now and then, and every time I threw too much, and it didn't bother me. Well, till the end of the season, I threw that out, and if you remember, Yul Blackwell, the one they called the Whip, now he could fire that ball, and right-hand hitters despise hitting against him. But it ended up until the end of the season, I think he had pitched that no-hitter, and he was on his second one, so Eddie Stanky hit a line drive right back through his legs to break up the second no-hitter. Well, till the end of the season, I had won, the last month of the season, I had won more ball games than what he did. So that was 48, 49, 50, I was winning some more ball games, and we had some ball players there, like Big Ted Kruszewski hit a ball to Mal. We had got Ron Northey from, he was with the Phillies when I was with them, and then he went to St. Louis, and we got him at Cincinnati. We had a third baseman by the name of Grady Hatch. We got Big Frank McCormick.
What am I supposed to do?
He came back to Cincinnati, and we had Grady Hatton, Bobby Adams, Gus Bell. You know, when I go over some of these lists, we had pitchers, Howie Fox, Herm Wiemeyer, Johnny Vandermeer. And when I go over these lists that I see, and former ball players, I think half of the ball players on the Cincinnati club have passed on, which I know Vandermeer just died this past summer. Blackwell's dead, Wiemeyer's dead, Howie Fox is dead, Gus Bell's dead, Johnny Y. Rostick's dead, Ron Northey's dead. I had a local catcher from Harrisburg, Ray Mueller, who was a wonderful receiver. Never hit much, but he was a great receiver. He's often told the manager, he said, "I could sit back there in a rocking chair and catch me."
Suzuki's dead too.
This is where I had was considered one of the best control pitchers in the big leagues at the time. because it showed on my base on balls for 9 innings. So it ended up at 54. We had 7 left-hand pitchers on the ball club. And in spring training, usually I was the oldest guy on the ball club. And the team went over to St. Petersburg to play that day, to play the Yankees. And usually the manager would leave me in charge of the fellas that didn't make the trip. Well, that trip, that day, they asked me to go along. I wasn't scheduled to pitch batting practice. I wasn't scheduled to pitch in the ball game. I don't know why I went along. I was out in the outfield running, and this is when Bernie Tebbets was there. I can't say much for him, so he ended up, we were in the outfield running, and likely run from right field over to left field, and he threw the ball, and the ball hit me in the heel of the glove, and the next place it hit was the ground, and the next step I took, I tramped right on it and turned my ankle over. Well, that ended my career at Cincinnati. Because when I was sent down, he told me, he said, well, you're not worried about losing your job, are you? I said, no, I hope not. But it ended up at, they asked me to go down to Havana, Cuba. Well, I was a 10-year man at the time, and I didn't have to go. See, this is when we didn't have agents at the time. And Gabe Paul ended up being our general manager, and he told me, he said, Ken, if you want to call any manager in the big leagues that they think they can use you, and there's the office phone. Go ahead and call. Well, right away I called Buzzy Vivace at Brooklyn, because I knew at one time he tried to get me. And I called him and talked to him. He said, yeah, Ken, we'd be interested. He said, if we could get you in 30 days, if we feel like you can't help the ball club, are you satisfied to go to Montreal? I said, well, what can I do? He said, well, I'll call Mr. Paul back and make the deal. Well, it ended up, and he called Gabe Paul back, and then Gabe Paul wanted the waiver price for me. Instead of giving my release and making the deal for me to go to Brooklyn, he wanted the waiver price where they wouldn't pay it. So it ended up that I went down to Cuba in 54, and I ended up winning 10 and losing 9 that year for another second division ball club, and we came back up, and I had to get my same salary when I went down there in 54, but then in 55, they really fixed you up good. They cut me $6,000 in salary, so I sent the contract back about 3 times. They wasn't gonna move, and I had to move if I wanted to play ball that year. Well, 30 or 55, I went back down there, and our manager, Reggie Otero, asked me, he said, he always called me Pappy. He said, how do you want to pitch? I said, well, I want to pitch every 4 days if I can. I said, if I prove that I can't, then that'll be good. Well, I got down to where he was only using me every Sunday, and that wasn't enough. Because in between, I wasn't working enough, and I was getting wild, and it ended up at, we had a wonderful owner down there, Bobby Medora, and I told him, he always sat there at the ballpark at nighttime, and I told him, I said, Bobby, I said, how about making a deal for me, and see if I can't get up in the States someplace. Well, in the meantime, that was 55, we had our last child. Well, we had ended up with 4 boys and a girl. And of all the places that he could have made a deal for me. I wanted to get close to home. I guess you remember Freddie Hutchinson when he managed Cincinnati, and he ended up being the manager up at Seattle. He said, yeah, I'll take Ken. Well, here's going from Cuba all the way out to Seattle, Washington, and I wanted to get close to home, so I said, no, I wouldn't go out that far. So they ended up releasing me, and I came home here, and I went down and worked out with the Baltimore Club for a couple days. They only had one left-hand pitcher, this little left-hander they got from the Yankees, Artie Shylock. And Paul Richards was the manager down there that year. And I'd go down every day and throw about 20 minutes, half an hour batting practice for him, and show him that I couldn't throw yet. Well, it ended up my conversation with Richards. He was never out when I was throwing batting practice. I mean, his coaches could have told him something, but my conversation with Richards that year was, Kenny said, I think you'd be a big help around young pitchers. That was my conversation with Paul Richards. So he told me to go and see the farm director, Harry McLaughlin, and he asked me if I'd come up here to York and play here at York. And I don't know how you thought in Harrisburg, ought to remember George Stoller. Well, he was our manager there at York that year, and I ended up, I think, winning 13 games that year for York, and I thought, well, this will give me a chance of maybe one of the AAA clubs might take a chance and draft me. Well, I'm getting up there about 38 years old then. Going on 39, I thought, well, I can still pitch. We had a general manager here, I don't know where he ever got his knowledge, but about 2 weeks after the season was over in 55, they gave me my release. So it ended up that there I was without a job. Well, I started writing around to, and in the meantime, when I was in Cuba, I had pitched one night in Montreal, and I won my game up there. And Johnny Noon, who I said was our manager at Cincinnati, was scouting for the Yankees. And he came into Toronto, where we went for the next series. And I seen him there in the lobby, and he said, when are you going to pitch again? I said, well, I just pitched Friday night, John. He said, well, the Yankees sent me up here to look at you. I said, oh, my, what a thrill. Said, you think you could pitch Sunday? Well, with one day's rest, that's a pretty good order. I said, I'll try. Well, it ended up, and I asked Otero, I said, Scott's here from the Yankees. I said, he'd like to see me pitch Sunday. While we were playing a doubleheader, he said, well, you pitch the second game. Well, that was good. I got through about two innings, no trouble. And we had a downpour up there, just like we've been having around here for the last couple weeks. And I stiffened up, and I went out there to start the third inning. And boy, that was like throwing batting practice at Toronto Club. There went my trip to the Yankees. And in fact, a couple days later, if you remember, they used to have a left-hand pitcher by the name of Tommy Byrne. Well, they recalled Tommy from the minor leagues and instead of me. Well, I got home that fall, and I wrote to the general manager up there and told him about the way the thing set up. That I tried to pitch with one day's rest. I said, I don't think I give very much of a show on my showing that day. And I said, I'd be interested in getting a job, maybe as like a roving pitching coach going around to your minor league farm clubs. Well, you get a nice letter back, and well, right at the present time, we don't need anybody, but we'll keep you in mind. Well, I wrote to a couple clubs, and this is the answer you got back. We don't need anybody right at the present time, but we'll keep you in mind. Clarence Rowland, who was our president out of Los Angeles when I played out there. He was the vice president of the Chicago Cubs at the time. This is 56. I wrote to him, and he called me long distance. He said, Ken, he said, would you be interested in managing? Gee, this is the right step. I said, yeah, I would. Well, we need a manager, a playing manager. I'm 39 years old. Now, what are they worried about me being a playing manager? I'm not going any place anymore. So it ends up they needed a playing manager down at Lafayette, Louisiana, in what they call the Evangeline League. Well, I went down there and went to spring training with the Cubs out in Mesa, Arizona, and then we came back in there and we ended up winning the pennant down there that year. Well, the next year they moved me up to, I didn't pitch that year, I pitched that year, but we had young pitchers that you'd ask them to go out and pitch batting practice. You only got 20 minutes when you went away someplace, and they couldn't even pitch two, three hitters because they couldn't get the ball over the plate. Well, I'd run out and throw 20 minutes of batting practice and they'd get a round and a half of batting practice. And the game would start, and they'd get in trouble. I'd run down, throw a half a dozen pitches in the bullpen, and win and relieve. So, 47 or 57, they moved me up to Burlington, Iowa in the 3I League. Well, it's the same story up there, a playing manager. Well, the money they were paying you in the minor leagues at that time was, I think I was making more when I pitched over here at Columbia almost. And we ended up fourth there and we got eliminated in the playoffs and the Cubs released me after the 57 season. And that was the end of my baseball career. So, different ones asked me if I'd be interested in managing some of these county league teams. I said, no. I don't think I could take it because I get two red eggs to start off with. And it ended up that was it. And I became a bartender around York there for about 30 years. And I had to give that up because I said, this place I was working, now I was stewarding four different clubs. That was good work in there because you knew you had 21-year-old people in there. But when you worked in a public place, these college kids would come in and you'd, well, show me some identification. Oh, I don't have it with me. I bought the car. Well, that's the last you've seen them. So I gave up tending bar and just sat back taking my fees. I love to fish, and the only fishing I do is when I go to Canada for a week. And we're going up there in August again. I enjoy that. Well, I think that's about the resume of my career, and I'll answer some questions if anybody has.